Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, the original home of the Pelton Cast, for one of our favorite annual features.
We are looking back at 2017 in Seattle sports.
And looking ahead to 2018 with our bold predictions coming up later in the show with a special guest.
Ooh.
But first, we are going to start by looking back and go through the top 10 stories in Seattle sports in 2017. So we'll begin with a few honorable mentions here. We have a section that I like to call coaching changes because there are a lot of those in the city of Seattle in 2017. The Seattle Storm fired Jenny Busek as head coach midway through their season. Ultimately hired Dan Hughes is her full-time replacement for 2018 and beyond. So we'll see how Dan Hughes does next season. Seattle University fired Cameron Dollar, who returned to UW as an assistant coach, and hired Jim Hayferth from Eastern Washington is his replacement, who has done a pretty solid job so far at Seattle U. I was going to say their record, but then I didn't look it up, so now I'm going to have to do it on the fly. And it turns out that they are 9-6 so far in non-conference play. Most of those losses coming to major conference opposition, including a narrow 5-point loss at UW. Next up, UW women's basketball coach Mike Neighbors, after a very successful run with the Huskies, leaves for Arkansas, going back to his native home, and is replaced by Jody Wynn. Took me a while I had to think about who the new head coach of UW women's basketball was. That took a minute. Seattle Ring coach Laura Harvey resigned and was replaced by Vlatko Andonovsky. And lastly, UW offensive coordinator Jonathan Smith named the head coach at Oregon State.
And we might hear about more coaching changes later on in our top 10 sports stories.
There is one more notable one to come. All right, perhaps the most disappointing story on this list, although I didn't think it quite merited a spot in the top 10 because technically nothing happened. The Mariners not signing Shohei Ohtani.
Which really could be a sports story for every single player.
Yeah.
The only thing that happened was a rival GM said that they would feel good if they were a small market on the West Coast, which I guess maybe Anaheim is.
I don't know that was the only thing that happened. A lot of things happened to get our hopes up. And then, as usual, they were dead.
There was some flirting, but we could also have Mariners don't trade for Giancarlo Stanton.
I mean, yes. I think this one is a little bit different, it's fair to say. Next up, Sue Bird became the WNBA's all-time assist leader on September 1st, passing Tisha Panichero in a game against the Washington Mystics to earn that honor. So congrats to third Pelton sibling,
Sue Bird. I was going to say, and Sue Bird being on the Pelton Cast was an important moment for her this year.
Absolutely. One of the highlights of her year.
I assume she has that in her own personal top 10 sports stories.
Much like third Pelton brother Ben B talked about his three top highlights of 2017, and right there at the very top was being a guest on the Pelton Cast. Same thing for Sue Bird, who had no other notable events happen during.
Did Ben have his children in 2017, or is that 2016?
I'm hoping it for his sake it was 2016.
It would have been a real Tristan move to not mention his children being born as one of his top three moments that happened.
It was behind published some papers and stuff. Lastly,
if you would have asked me top 10 personal stories, actually did have a child born in 2017,
that just
at the very beginning, I would not have even considered it.
All right, lastly, on the honorable mentions, the Homestry Bank wins the Albert Lea Appliance Seafair Cup piloted by Jimmy Shane. What a thrilling moment that none of us can forget, even though even I had to go look this up to double check.
Under the smoke in Seattle, a very strange seafair.
It was an unusual seafair weekend with the haze off the wildfires. All right, let's get into the top 10.
Okay.
We'll start with number 10, a story that encompasses UW basketball as a whole, both men's and women's. Markelle Fultz and Kelsey Plum, both chosen number one in their respective drafts. UW making history is the first team ever to have that happen in the same year.
Kind of an amazing moment that happened. We kind of saw how both of those have turned out now a few months later. Kelsey Plum having a disappointing rookie season with the Stars.
San Antonio Stars, who now have moved to Las Vegas and become the Las Vegas Aces. And I'm feeling good about year two for Kelsey Plum.
Oh, she's going to be good in year two. Moving to Las Vegas will definitely be good for her. And Markelle Fultz, who's only played a handful of games in an injury-riddled season with the Sixers so far.
Yeah, a bit of a mysterious shoulder injury that has plagued him during his rookie campaign. Sadly,
people are tempted to start using the B word around Markelle Fultz already.
I mean, that's ridiculously premature, but not the start I think that any of us expected or certainly that he hoped for. All right, number 9 on this list. The Seattle Seahawks lose to the Atlanta Falcons in the divisional playoff round.
In a game which is still controversial to us as replayed on the internet.
Yes. You can still find Tristan's rants about the officiating in this game. It's weird. I feel like I only have vague memories of this game at this point, and maybe of the game that preceded this, which did not specifically make the top 10, the Seahawks beating the lowly Detroit Lions in the wild card round of the playoffs at home.
It's kind of amazing. For Seahawks seasons, what we've had is either they've been, or playoff runs especially, the number one seed where we went into the playoffs thinking there's a pretty good chance they're going to go to the Super Bowl. Then there were seasons where the Seahawks were the top team in DVOA, looked like they were on a roll, and we thought, this team could probably win some road games in the playoffs. And then there was this season, which was neither of which, we kind of went into it thinking, maybe they'll get lucky.
I don't know. I mean, for this time a year ago, we recorded this podcast before the Seahawks lost at home to the Arizona Cardinals, dashing their hopes at a first-round bye. Let me tell you, there was some confidence.
The takes were hot. This time a year ago. Oh, no.
All right, number 8.
I'm more upset about that loss than any loss in the past year.
That's completely fair. Number 8. Clint Dempsey returns from a heart issue to win MLS Comeback Player of the Year. A really awesome story, I think.
Kind of an amazing story. Leads the team in goals, starts the most matches that he has ever started for the Sounders.
I didn't know that.
In the year returning from a heart condition, and then also playing alongside with the USMNT, and maybe his inclusion in some of the matches where he didn't play was more important than the ones that he did.
Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, there was no expectation that he would necessarily play again this time a year ago. I mean, I think we were hopeful that he would, but you didn't necessarily know after he missed the Sounders' run to the MLS Cup in 2016. So very exciting to have Deuce back on the field. And perhaps an honorable mention here that he extended his contract and will be a Sounder again in 2018. And that is not just a bold prediction. Number 7. The Seahawks make a pair of major trades for veterans, acquiring Sheldon Richardson right before the start of the season and then Duane Brown midway through the season in deals that so far have not yielded the payoff at a team level that the Seahawks anticipated. That was the most polite way I could say that.
I mean, these trades are kind of emblematic of the Seahawks going all in on a season where as of right now they have a 30% chance of making the playoffs.
And need someone to beat someone else to do it. Don't have that within
their control.
Even
if they do make the playoffs, their chances of going to the Super Bowl will be less than 30%.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be the sixth seed. They'll be very low. All right, number 6, UW football reaches the New Year's Six for a second consecutive year playing against Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl. So perhaps not the exciting conclusion of the season that Husky fans, and including some members of this podcast, were anticipating going into the year, but still an impressive performance nonetheless.
I don't like that you're hinting at my previous bold predictions, because I haven't revisited them. Oh. They're bold.
Too bold. Too bold, Stan.
This was a great conclusion to the year for the Huskies, something that looked a little bit unlikely at a couple different points throughout the season.
I mean, it looked somewhat unlikely the weekend before it happened. It wasn't even a certainty until the morning of the announcement of the bowl pairings.
But being able to go to the Fiesta Bowl for the first time ever, playing a power like Penn State, even having that opportunity has meant we're sitting here about a week after the early signing day in college football, and I think that Coach Pete has been able to use that as kind of fuel to help out this really great closing class that he's gotten for next season.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of excitement certainly about UW football going forward. All right, number 5, Kelsey Plum making her second appearance in this top 10 becomes the NCAA Division I all-time leading scorer and does it in style by putting up 57 points in her final regular season home game against Utah, a game that both members of the Pelton cast attended.
This was crazy. It was both the only and the greatest UW women's basketball game that I've ever attended.
It's going to be hard to top. Yeah, I mean, you went into that game thinking, okay, there's an outside chance maybe she'll get there. I mean, I think she went in needing somewhere in the 40s to get there, and then she just blew past it so easily. I mean, 57 is almost as many points as I've seen scored in any game, like 48-minute NBA games at any level. Damian Lillard scored 59 a few weeks later. That's, I think, the record for me. I mean,
unstoppable as a scorer in this game.
Yeah. Utah had no answer whatsoever.
If you were to equate 57 in a women's college basketball game to a 48-minute NBA game, how many points do you think that is? Is this Kobe Bryant 81?
It's probably not that far. I'd say it's high 60s, maybe 70.
Still a pretty amazing performance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you very rarely see that.
Especially because every single possession, Utah knew where the ball was going.
Yeah. No mystery in this one. All right, number four. The Sounders return to the MLS Cup, winning the Western Conference for the second consecutive years, but lose in their rematch to Toronto FC 2-0.
Yep.
I mean, the MLS Cup is not a good story, but getting back is a good story.
Yes. Getting back is amazing. I mean, being able to go to the MLS Cup two seasons in a row, especially when both of the seasons, they looked down and out. We were thinking at one point during each of the... I want to find the right word for the MLS season.
The slog?
The sojourn of the MLS season. At one point during each of those seasons, we anticipated the Sounders were not going to make the playoffs at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that seemed quite possible at one point.
And then being able to turn it around and dominate through the playoffs this season especially.
Yep.
And then return to the MLS final was a very impressive feat for Brian Schmetzer's club.
All right, number three. The Seahawks lose Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman to season-ending injuries in their Thursday night football win over the Arizona Cardinals.
The tolls that game took. I mean, people will look back on this and probably a little bit unfairly will cite Thursday night football as the game that derailed the Seahawks 2017 season.
I mean, I don't think they'll be unfair in pointing to this game. I mean, yes, you had the bad loss at home to Washington before this, but... those injuries...
I meant citing Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, yeah. So you're citing the fact that the game was played on Thursday, yes. And I think that the evidence really does not bear that out. But this pretty clearly seemed to be the end of an era for Seattle, the Seahawks, with two members of the Legion Boom going down. Obviously, already had Cliff Avril injured by this point, but
yes,
this was a whole different level.
That was the other one that I'd add to this list, because we had both Cam Chancellor and Cliff Avril getting injured on kind of mysterious injuries, both what could be described as stingers, I think.
Yep.
And both of which, at this point right now, look like they could potentially be career-ending.
Yeah, real bummer there.
But the Cam Chancellor play in particular, I mean, Sherman, we saw it all play out, right?
Mm-hmm.
We saw the play on the field. We saw him on the sidelines telling people that his ACL was torn.
Achilles.
That his Achilles was torn. And it was kind of a surreal moment seeing the star defensive player on the Seahawks for the last 7 years.
That checks out. I don't know if he was a star all 7 of those years. But
standing
yeah.
on the sidelines telling people that he's not going to be playing for the rest of this year and that next year could be in question before anybody was really able to report on it.
Right.
I mean, it's very different than most injuries we've seen ever. But the Cam Chancellor injury was so different.
It snuck up on us at the end.
It occurred
like it was anything serious.
The last or the second to last play of the game, a play where he maybe even shouldn't have been out there.
I think it was a little earlier than that. But it definitely... These injuries took a lot of the excitement out of what should have been a pretty good road win on Thursday Night Football.
Well, I mean, you have to look across the NFL in general and just constantly point to devastating injuries that happen. And I feel like that's what we're going to remember from the season.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Devastating and a little bit mysterious.
All right, number two, the last of the coaching changes is alluded to earlier. Lorenzo Romar, after, now I'm going to try to do this math off the top of my head, 16 seasons as the head coach of the University of Washington men's basketball team, is fired at the end of a dismal season and replaced with Mike Hopkins, Syracuse assistant coach.
And it's kind of amazing how time can change your perspective on things.
How so?
Well, so what this Lorenzo Romar firing meant was not just that Lorenzo Romar wasn't going to be here. He had this top 10 class that was coming in.
We spent a lot of time in the bold predictions talking about Michael Porter.
Oh, no.
No one boldly predicted that he was going to go to Missouri, which I think I brought up on the podcast later, or B, that he was going to barely play in college at all, as it turned out.
So it didn't just mean losing Lorenzo Romar. It meant losing this recruiting class, especially Michael Porter Jr., who a year ago today we probably anticipated could have been the first pick in the draft.
There's an extended chunk of this where we talk about whether he's better than Markelle Fultz.
Which, I mean, who knows, but we were anticipating there was a good chance that Husky basketball would have had the number one pick in the draft consecutive years. Because it looked pretty good a year ago today that Markelle would be the number one pick.
Did it?
Oh, did we not predict that?
Just wait and see.
Oh,
just
man.
Wait till we get there.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, we shouldn't focus so much. I mean, this is also someone who was the only coach you had basically ever known in your life as a Husky basketball fan.
Oh, I knew Bob Bender.
I mean, come on.
I knew Bob Bender well.
You watched that NCAA tournament run in 98. I don't know how much else Husky basketball you were watching.
You're crazy. I was paying tons of attention to Husky basketball under the Bob Bender era.
You were all about that one game we went to.
New Mexico? Thank you, Kerry.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, okay. I guess maybe you remember more of that. But anyway, Romar was like a dominant fixture in Seattle sports for many, many years. And so losing him is a major change and a major blow.
Then it's kind of interesting to watch the team now. I think our anticipation was, especially for this first year, that it would be a real struggle with Mike Hopkins. And
I think it still might be a real struggle.
It might be a real struggle, but it's not looking like a disaster.
No, it's definitely not looking like that.
And wait, don't move on. Just give Lorenzo a moment.
Let it breathe.
There were times where when Lorenzo Romar joined the coaching staff at Arizona in particular, and it looked like maybe he was going to bring some of his recruiting sway to Arizona, which he may still.
Could be difficult given the allegations against Arizona at this point.
That's what I'm saying, is a lot of things have changed. So since that time period, the Huskies look, at the very least, they've been able to beat the non-conference opponents they should have beaten this season.
They have definitely been able to beat them.
They went into Kansas and won.
They did.
Michael Porter Jr. transfers to Missouri.
Not transfers, but...
Well, okay. Commits to Missouri, and then is injured for the entire season, basically instantly.
You know he's playing quite well, though.
Jonte
Porter is playing quite well.
It would have been nice to have Jonte, but they keep Jalen Noel around, who looks like a star already.
Yes.
And Arizona doesn't look like a powerhouse in the Pac-12 in the same way that they did, or maybe seemed in the spring when Lorenzo was joining Sean Miller's staff. I'm just saying that things change very quickly when you're in the prediction game.
Yeah, I guess we'll find that out soon. All right, the number one Seattle sports story of 2017. The city of Seattle approves a memorandum of understanding for Oakview Group to renovate Key Arena. And days after the city council passes this, NHL announces that it will accept and consider an expansion application from members of the Oakview group, the ownership group that they've put together, David Bonderman and Jerry Bruckheimer, to bring an NHL expansion franchise to Seattle in 2020 when a renovated Key Arena reopens. Certainly in terms of long-term impact, this is the biggest thing that happened in Seattle sports in 2017.
And we may not know what it means for years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We may not have a sense. I mean, a year from now, we might not know what how this is going to shake out, both for hockey and basketball in Seattle and the city of Seattle.
Yep.
I mean, this is something that we may have to wait 20 years to look back on to really understand if this was the right move for the city.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to let the creeping determinism sink in that this was like always a foregone conclusion that this was going to happen. Again, we'll find out in bold predictions that that was not the case always.
No, I mean, a year ago, we didn't consider this as a possibility really at all. It looked like
I wouldn't say that. But again,
was there steam for Key Arena a year ago?
Yeah, yeah, they had announced that they were going to start the process of accepting proposals. But again, we'll get to it in bold predictions.
Man.
Yeah, but only time will tell kind of what the significance of this is.
At the very least, this is most likely going to mean hockey in Seattle.
Yes, that is true.
So it is still
a sport that hasn't been here in almost a century.
I mean, it's a big story, and
at least at the highest professional level, of course.
Yes.
Shouts to the Thunderbirds.
I mean, this is going to be huge, adding another major professional sports team to Seattle.
Yeah. All right, so the number one sports story of the year is a good segue to my Seattle sports figure of the year.
Really?
So we should recap here, by the way, quickly. In 2013, the first year we did this, I chose Pete Carroll. You chose Russell Wilson. In 2014, when we did this we did this retroactively, you chose Richard Sherman. I did Marshawn Lynch. 2015, having not previously taken Russell Wilson when he actually became a good quarterback, like an elite quarterback. I took him. You took Michael Bennett. In 2016, we both officially had Coach Pete, Chris Peterson, although you unofficially had Kevin Durant and delivered a memorable rant about his joining the Warriors.
Rant?
Yeah. Rave?
Monologue.
Okay. For 2017, love him or hate him, one person did more to shape the future of Seattle sports than anyone else, and that person is Tim Leiweke, who was the driving force behind Oakview Group's successful attempt to renovate Key Arena. They outlasted his former, you know, co-workers at AEG, where he used to work before going to Toronto to run MLSE and then eventually landing at Oakview. He is going to, it appears, bring the NHL back to the Seattle, really, for the first time. Possibly the NBA. We'll find out again down the road. But the renovation of Key Arena, it's the biggest news story. And the reason it's happening is Tim Leiweke's force of personality and his ability to connect with members of Seattle government.
I really thought about that one, but I couldn't. Given what I think it probably means for basketball going forward, I just couldn't commit to that being the sports star of the year.
All right, who was your pick then?
I went with Clint Dempsey. Clint Dempsey returning from a heart condition, which maybe looked like he would never play soccer again, at least professionally. And then comes back in 2017, like I mentioned, leads the Sounders in goals, is kind of key to their run to the MLS Cup. You know, the offense ran through Clint Dempsey this year, and he returned to the level that he was at, or even higher than he was before.
I think this was his best season with the Sounders, so yeah.
Having that kind of comeback, you know, the Sounders don't dominate culture in Seattle the same way that the Seahawks did. That's why there hasn't been Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, all these people. And Brian Schmetzer, I could have considered here also, considering that he's been the coach for 1.5 seasons, and they've been to the MLS Cup twice.
Yep.
It's a very impressive feat. But I think Clint Dempsey returning from that injury and returning at the same level that he was at before or higher and leading the Sounders to the MLS Cup means he was Seattle Sports Star of the Year.
Who else did you consider? Anyone else? Kelsey Plum, I would
Kelsey
say.
Plum.
Yeah, she was my runner-up. I mean, the first 4 months of 2017, a pretty cool choice, appearing in two of the top 10 stories. She is one of the greatest athletes in Seattle sports history, but then, you know, then she went in.
She was only in Seattle for a few months.
If she had been drafted by the Storm, I think she probably would have won it. So.
It was tough otherwise, though. I mean, you know, we could have retroactively given it to Sean Kemp and Gary Payton for being so prominently featured in Shea Serrano's Basketball and Other Things. Plus, we were doing this in the 90s to give them each one.
I considered Macklemore for selling out Key Arena.
Oh, no. Seattle Sports Star of the Year.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
It was a tough year, though, because, I mean, the Seahawks are the obvious one. Last year with Coach Pete, the Huskies had a good season, but not necessarily an exceptional season. I think kind of across the board, there's nobody from the Mariners who really stood out.
Shohei Ohtani?
For not choosing the Mariners. For doing what we wish we could do and not choose the Mariners. But there was nobody who really stood out aside from Schmetz and Clint Dempsey to me.
And Kelsey Plum, apparently. All right, well, with that... let's move to the bold predictions portion of the podcast and welcome in our special guest. One of the most popular third Pelton siblings that we've had on this podcast in the last year. Really one of the highlights for us in 2017. And someone who every time I see her in person, which is sadly not that often, requests to be on the podcast. So glad to make that wish come true. Yeah. Writer for ESPN the magazine. You know her also from all sorts of various platforms. Lebatard Show. Why can't I remember the name? PTI. Not PTI.
Around the Horn, but I am often told on the internet, great job on PTI, which I've never
done. because other people besides me apparently make that mistake. Anyways, welcome again to the pod, Mina Kimes.
You'd think a favorite guest would have been invited back on earlier. I mean, I'm not saying anything, but you know, like a little, I mean, you know, glad to be back on. That's all I'll say.
You got to keep the people wanting more.
That's true. That's true. Well, I'm glad to be, it's a exciting moment in the Seahawks season now that we've all decided to trade Russell Wilson and blow it up.
I assume that's everyone's bold predictions for 2018.
Yeah. Russell Wilson won't be on the team next year.
Yes. Makes sense. Logical.
All right, we're going to start by revisiting a time when we were much more confident about the Seahawks predictions. As we mentioned earlier in this podcast, we recorded last year's 2017 bold predictions before the Seahawks lost at home to Arizona in week 16.
Forgot about that.
And thus ending their expectation and hope of a first round bye. So Tristan's annual Super Bowl prediction was much, much bolder this time a year ago. All right, let's start with the Seahawks predictions from last year. All right, I predicted that the Seahawks would play at Dallas on Thursday Night Football to open the season because I expected the Cowboys at that point to win the Super Bowl. That obviously was very wrong.
Really? Wow, that was a terrible prediction. Why did you think that? Their defense was so bad last year.
It's true. That is true. But so was Atlanta's at this time a year ago, and someone had to win the NFC and almost beat the Patriots. I mean, really should have realized that the Patriots were just not going to be beaten.
Yeah. I mean, I predict every year it's the Patriots pretty much, which stinks and is boring, but sometimes old reliable, you know, is the right bet.
So Tristan's prediction was that the Seahawks would complete a perfect home season.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Wow.
And defeat Dallas in the NFC Championship game.
You too.
To face the Patriots in a Super Bowl rematch.
Wow. What was their home record this year?
So he was referring to last year when they were unbeaten at home going into that Arizona game.
Only one loss. Not that far off.
Oh, I thought you meant you thought the home record would be perfect the following year. Actually, though, yeah. It
has been far from perfect this year.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay, that was wrong.
Let's see. My other Seahawks bold prediction.
I got the Patriots part right, though.
You did get that. My other Seahawks bold prediction was that Gus Bradley would rejoin the Seahawks coaching staff. Despite the questions that were asked of Pete Carroll leading up to the game at Jacksonville, he in fact is the defensive coordinator now for the LA Chargers.
Wait, did people ask Pete Carroll about Gus Bradley?
So someone did ask that question.
He mistakenly thought he was the coach of the Jaguars, and Pete handled it to his credit very kindly.
He did.
Gently, which is something I've always liked about him.
Your prediction about the 2017 Seahawks season is that the Seahawks would currently be leading the NFC West with an 8-7 record.
I was not that far off.
Yeah, well,
you were far off on one part of it.
Yeah, well, no one saw the Rams coming.
Exactly. We're going to review the 2017 over underlines that we did with Danny Kelly after the season ends, and those are even worse, spectacularly bad.
Still, I read the tenor of where the NFC West was going. I just didn't really get that the Rams would be that good. Look, this was before they had Sean McVay.
I mean, you were right. You mentioned age, defensive regression. Both of those things have, in fact, hit the Seahawks this year. So you weren't so far off. I mean, they're not far from having an 8-7 record. But again, the rest of the NFC West, not so much. Let's get into the Mariners. So I started out by boldly predicting the Mariners would win fewer than 78 games than 80 games this year, which was correct.
Nice.
You originally predicted the Mariners would be below 500, but then decided that take was not hot enough. In a preview of Mariners hot takes, and then predicted that they would win 75 games.
Precisely.
I guess I gave you less than 75 or fewer, but in fact they won 78.
So
right in that sweet spot where I was right and you were wrong.
Every year we win by going negative on the Mariners.
Yeah, I mean, it's like betting on the Patriots, right?
Exactly. But really every other year, because every other year they're going to exceed expectations, although we'll see what we predict this year. Sounders. Both of us had Jordan Morris-related bold predictions. I predicted that he would transfer to a European team in a move that would not become official until after the 2017 season.
Not even close. You were thinking of Jovan Jones.
You predicted that Jordan Morris would lead the MLS in goals and be poised to transfer to Europe. So the actual MLS goal leader was Nemanja Nikolic of the Chicago Fire, as everyone knows. He scored 24 goals. Jordan Morris finished tied for 87 with his three goals.
Three goals?
That's all he scored. I mean, oh, obviously, the hamstring injury was a big factor in that, but even before he went down, not the best season
for Jordan Morris. I did not expect Will Bruin's rise.
No one did. UW football. I predicted that UW football would not win the Pac-12 North. Correctly predicted that.
Wow.
You said that last year, too. Yeah. UW football does not win the Pac-12 North.
Wow. Does not win the. You're really believing in Willie Taggart.
I think Stanford is going to win the Pac-12 North. You predicted that the college football playoff spot from the Pac-12 would be determined by a Pac-12 championship matchup of undefeated USC and undefeated UW. That did not come to pass. This is so good.
I'm more just disappointed in Sam Darnold.
Yeah, that's fair.
First off, the non-conference schedule, again, is complete garbage.
It is.
Right? Just terrible. At Arizona State, at Oregon State, you can pencil those in as victories. You can pen them in as victories, right?
Let's see. Other predictions. Oh, I did not have a UW men's basketball prediction. You predicted that Lorenzo Romar would still be the coach.
Oh.
As I said earlier, not everyone expected that this time a year ago. And predicted that they would be ranked in the top 25 at this point, which they are not.
They would be if Lorenzo stole the coach.
Perhaps it would. Let's see here. What else do we have? Both of us had arena-related predictions. You predicted that ground would be broken on a new NBA NHL arena, and turns out you're probably 1 year off here. I predicted that...
Just an NHL arena, but okay.
I predicted that Key Arena renovation plans would stall in 2017.
Oh, no.
And was spectacularly wrong. As we saw with our number one sports story of 2017 in Seattle sports. All right, then my last bold prediction was that the Storm would draft Kelsey Plum. They did not.
Also wrong.
So I finished 2 of 7 last year, and you took the collar. A perfect 0 for 7 in your bold predictions of 2017.
That's how you know that my predictions were bold.
That's true. I mean, I'm hoping that you can use this power for good just by predicting everything negative this year. Go negative on everything.
I really might have. Meat understands this from around the horn. You go bold. People want to hear it. You never look back on it.
Yeah,
we're just making the mistake of revisiting it.
You're never held accountable for stuff you say, ever. You got to wild out. In fact, if you have more than a 500 rate on predictions, you're doing predictions wrong.
Those are our predictions for 2017. Mina, do you want to start us off with bold predictions for 2018?
Sure. All right. So mine are all going to be, well, here's one Mariners one. They're not going to make the playoffs. Surprise. All right. I don't have anything Sounders, Storm, UW football, or UW basketball related. Although UW basketball, I'm going to need your help bandwagoning them in March. Is that okay?
That won't be a problem this year. Once they get to conference play, it won't be a problem. Let's pay
zero attention for the next 2 months, and then I'm going to be a very long time Huskies fan.
Just if you pay a lot of attention to the CBI tournament, we'll help you bandwagon them there.
I've never heard of the CBI tournament until this moment, so this is a good start.
Maybe just bandwagon that win at Kansas. Just stick with that one win. Keep talking about that well through March and beyond.
I saw that. Well, they're ranked like 11th or something, right? Still or something good. Anyways. All right. Great talk. Okay.
they're 139th in the Ken Pomeroy rankings, right? Or as of last. I haven't looked at. I think that's where they were last I checked.
Okay. So football. So I'm going to start off with a very fan servicey one, but I think it's true. If the Seahawks miss the playoffs, Cable's done. If they make it, he's still on the team. They're not going to fire him. Because if they miss the playoffs, I think there's going to need to be some sort of bloodletting, you know? And I think the Seahawks are fully aware of how fans, like the sentiment about him, I think, across the league. And I believe that the trade for Dwayne Brown, in fact, might have been a reflection of that. And it might have been a top-down thing, I think. Paul Allen's aware of it. So anyway, there's going to have to be some sort of ritual sacrifice if this team doesn't make it to the playoffs. And I think it's going to be Tom Cable.
I really hope that that's true. One of my bold predictions about the Seahawks is that on the coaching staff a year from today, both Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable.
So good. You are using your power. Well, I mean, I don't feel strongly about Daryl Bevel. I
don't either.
Yeah.
I'm just nervous that especially if they finish 10-6 and miss the playoffs, they'll say, well, we were 10-6. It was a really tough NFC.
Yeah.
But I think their failure running requires like 2 years in a row to be as bad at running the football as they are have been. That requires some reevaluation. And guess who's the run game coordinator?
Yeah.
It's Tom Cable.
And I think, you know, true Hawksheads like ourselves have known for a long time that they've actually devoted a fair amount of resources towards the line. But there's been this national media narrative, well, he's not getting anything to work with. And you've started to see that shift this season, guys, where you've actually, I've noticed like the hot takers, I guess, beyond Seattle have been like, actually, they've kind of spent a few draft picks on their offensive line and they haven't worked out so well. So it does kind of feel like the groundswell of Cable's turning lemons into lemonade is flipping a little bit, which is good, obviously, because it's the truth. So my prediction is also predicated, I think, on that sort of narrative changing.
They also don't have a single converted basketball player on the offensive line at this point after George Vance's injury.
It definitely felt like Dwayne Brown, the lemons into lemonade. Lemons into lemons? What is it when you turn lemons into the same thing? We turn lemonade into lemons. It was like Dwayne Brown gets a holding penalty, and I'm like, we brought him down to our level. Welcome to Seattle, Dwayne.
He caught the disease, yes. Okay. So I'm just going to go like do some roster predictions because, you know, I think there's a lot of talk over there's a lot of guys coming up on the end of their deals, guys on 1 year deals or whatever. So I'm going to choose a few players who I do not think will be on this team next season.
Okay.
Cliff Averill, that's an obvious one. Beyond what's going to happen what's going on with his health, where, you know, no one knows if he's going to play football again. It's a very easy contract cut, save money, not a lot of dead money. Sheldon Richardson, I do not believe, will be on this team next year, which is unfortunate because I believe he's been more of a contributor maybe than some people have given credit for. You know, it's not really showing up in the numbers, but he's so disruptive. I just think he's going to command too much on the open market, number one. And number two, you know, we've seen some guys, I think, step up on the D-line. Jaron Reed was awesome last night. That's one that comes to mind. Nas Jones, I know they've been happy with. So it just doesn't, I don't think that's going to be a tremendous area of need relative to what they'd have to pay for him.
See what, if anything, Malik McDowell can give the Seahawks if he's able to get back next year. My bold prediction from August on Malik McDowell and not panicking over that still looks terrible.
I've just written him off, which, you know, it's sad and sucky. And then one more guy who I do not think will be on the team next year is Paul Richardson. Yeah, I know. I like him. I just think that part of the reason why I think he's not going to be on the team next year is I think they're going to keep Jimmy Graham, that's sure to be divisive. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about it. You know, basically, Jimmy Graham has proven to only be useful in the red zone.
Yes.
But they figured out what to do with him, right? I mean, it's I don't know if you guys would feel this way, but when they go into the red zone now, I feel like it's a sure thing almost, the way they're using him, where they just ISO him one-on-one against a guy. And given how much this team has struggled in the red zone for a lot of Russell Wilson's career, this isn't like a new thing. It kind of makes me think they're just going to keep him for that purpose. But again, obviously this all depends on value.
It's where, yeah, you were referencing on Sunday during the game that they got the ball into Jimmy Graham territory when they got it down to the one or the two.
Seems to be more or less worthless anywhere else.
And that's what I was going to say, is like it's somehow, so last year Jimmy Graham was actually quite valuable as a tight end. I think much more valuable than he has been this year.
Yeah.
But didn't do anything in the red zone. So can the Seahawks manage to get both of those at the same time, or are they somehow mutually exclusive?
I think it's the other way around, though. I think the Seahawks are going to keep Paul Richardson and going to let Jimmy Graham go.
Did you have a bold prediction on this?
I didn't. I wanted to do the roster because in and out predictions when we do the season review.
I did have a bold prediction that I've kind of been leaning towards for a while here, which is that the Seahawks will trade Richard Sherman. I mean, I don't know what they can get for him coming off a ruptured Achilles, but...
No, I want to talk about that one. Because so looking at the Legion of Boom, right? And so there's no reason to... You don't really gain anything by moving on from Cam in savings. So he's either going to play or he's not next year, right?
Right.
That is what it is. Earl, I mean, obviously this has been a hot topic given what happened after the Dallas game.
he'll be on the Cowboys.
Yeah. Okay. So nothing's going to happen with Earl. He's arguably the best trade piece on this roster right now. I mean,
besides Russ.
Yes, on the defense. KJ would be a good trade piece as well, but I didn't know him. But anyways, Earl, you know, he's 28 and he's making about $10 million a year. I mean, he's a bargain right now. And this entire defense is still built around him. I just don't, I don't know if they're going to extend him, but he's certainly going to be on this team and I think finish out in Seattle.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I'm fine if Earl wants to play some Twilight Years in Dallas. I am totally okay with that. But his going to Jason Garrett and being like, come and get me if you can, it's like Jason Garrett's not going to be there to come and get you.
I don't know if you saw Jerry Jones' press conference earlier today where he said that it would not be in the best interests of the Cowboys to make a coaching change at this time. But he's also not the GM. There's also that part of it.
Yes.
Well, we didn't even talk about Sherm. So but they could actually... There's the trade, cut, keep situation, right? So they could trade him, but I, as you were suggesting, I don't really think they're going to get that much value for him, especially coming off of the injury he's coming off of, the Achilles. Just haven't seen that many guys. It's not like an ACL, you know? Like, we haven't seen that many guys come off of that, which is why I think his value would be heavily depressed. It also felt like there was a little bit of sentiment turning against him as a player, the football sentiment last year, unfairly, I thought, but... So I don't think they're going to trade him just because I don't think they're going to get that much value for him. Now, if they cut him, they could actually save, I think, about $10 million. I just pulled it up. I don't think that they can get $10 million worth, you know, in free agency. So I think he's going to, like Earl, I think he'll finish up in Seattle. I don't think they're going to extend him, though.
Okay.
That's not very bold. None of my predictions about the roster are that bold as I'm saying them. Two more predictions. I feel like I got to go bolder here. All right. Number one, Chris Carson will come back and he will rush for over 1,000 yards next season.
Oh, that's interesting. Because one of my bold predictions is that Chris Carson will rush for fewer than 500 yards next year.
So do you believe that his injury is going to be too difficult, or is it just going to be like this team still will not have its running problem solved with the line and such?
More the latter, and that I think people got a little too excited over what was a relatively small sample size. I'm mostly going off the extreme success I had predicting this about Thomas. I actually, it was like, at that point, it was like less than 1,000 yards for Thomas Rawls in 2016 was the bold prediction. But Chris Carson, I feel like I need to scale it back after we've seen what's happened with Rawls, but I think there's some similarities there.
I love this Chris Carson prediction, and I'm excited about it. I predicted that the Seahawks will draft a running back within the first three rounds of the 2018 NFL draft.
Ooh. Yeah, so I actually think if the Seahawks had Chris Carson healthy this season and it had not had whatever, they would have won the division. That's not a bold prediction. It's just a bold take. Do you agree or disagree?
Probably disagree.
I mean,
I like it, though.
Look how close they came to running the division, though. They almost won it.
Right.
It's more of a Rams are good opinion than the Seahawks. Than anything about the Seahawks. Maybe they pull off one more victory, but probably still lose the division and are comfortably in the playoffs.
But Jimmy G could have led the Seahawks to the division championship in the event that they had won one more game. Jimmy G!
I mean, next year is going to be hellacious. That's why... I mean, the NFC West is literally going to be like Mad Max next season. I cannot believe how good. It's just insane.
Okay, do you want one more bold prediction here?
Yeah, one more. Well, this isn't that bold, but you mentioned the draft. And I've been thinking, I think they're going to go outside linebacker first next season. I think they're going to try to get it. I think they're going to try to do another Bruce Irvin style pick, recreate that experiment. I've just kind of been thinking about, you know, because they don't need a cornerback. They can always reach for that or safety in secondary. I think they're pretty comfortable in the mid rounds. I don't think they're going to go D-line again. So that's just my feeling about.
They're super covered at third free safety.
Okay, I'll make a one final bold one. I know I said the division is great. Obviously, it's horrible. Too many good quarterbacks, too many good teams. I don't think the Seahawks will win the division, but I think they will do better than the playoffs and whatever team wins.
Interesting. Okay, I like that.
I actually kind of feel that way. Well, no, I don't feel that way now because there's too many injuries, but... I don't know. I'm not a Rams believer. That's all.
I mean, it would be very interesting if the Seahawks did make it into the playoffs, which no one has offered any bold predictions on Sunday's Panthers-Falcons game as yet.
So
I think they will.
You think the Seahawks will?
Yeah, I think I think they'll win, and I think the Panthers will win. Do you not?
My 2018 NFC West bowl prediction is that there will be another DVOA bowl in the NFC West between the LA Rams and San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, wow. That is the darkest timeline.
I don't think the Niners defense is there yet, but that's also really gross.
Yeah.
I was told this was a Seattle Homer podcast and I wouldn't have to listen to opinions like that.
We went too positive last year. Yeah, everything got ugly.
You guys are like rebounding so hard. It's so obvious. It's like when a team fires their coach and then hires the exact opposite. Yep. That's what you're doing. Yep. I see it. Fine. Wait, do you guys not, just to wrap this up, do you not think that they're going to win on Sunday and the Panthers are going to win?
I think they're going to win on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the Falcons are going to win.
Really? Why?
I think the Falcons are going to win, and we're going to be very upset about it.
Mm. Fatalism.
Maybe I don't know.
I mean, they're 4-point favorites in that one. So I mean, it's a mildly bold prediction to say the Panthers are going to win in Atlanta. I think.
Really, they're just a better team, and I think it wasn't good for the playoff purposes, but I think them throwing up a. Like they're very inconsistent, and I felt like last week was Cam's stinker, you know, and they're going to come back next week. I don't know. I just think that they're a better – I don't think Atlanta's a good football team at all. So in any case, please play this after we make it to the playoffs. If we don't, cut it off 5 minutes before.
I really, really like the idea of Steve Sarkisian being the reason that the Seahawks make the playoffs. I want that to be the case.
Couldn't you see that happen? I don't know.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mina. Appreciated your bold predictions, and you're not laughing too much at our 2017 bold predictions.
No problems, guys. See you in the Super Bowl.
All right. Let's wrap up our bold predictions here. Thanks again to Mina for joining us and offering Seahawks bold predictions. So let's see. We did our Seahawks ones. We did not do Mariners.
Can we summarize our Seahawks ones really quick?
All right. So
you do yours
first. I have trade Richard Sherman and Chris Carson rushes for fewer than 500 yards.
I had Seahawks will draft a running back within the first three rounds. So, okay, I want to go into this further than we could with Mina. I think that the Seahawks are going to look at the success of teams like the Rams and the Jaguars and say, we're similar to this, and try to recreate that and not understand that it's about the offensive line, but they're going to draft the running back.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think they really believe in Chris Carson. And I think that... I think they'll be wrong, but I think they'll believe in Chris Carson and don't feel the need to invest a lot of resources there.
I think they're going to look at Chris Carson and say, we believed in Thomas Rawls coming back from injury, and that hurt the team for maybe 2 years after.
I just don't think that's the way they look at it. All right. Okay. Do you have anything else on the Seahawks? You had the Rams 49ers.
I had a couple more.
Okay.
There'll be a DVOA bowl between the Rams and the 49ers next year. I'm getting in on the 49ers hype before everybody else can.
I'm taking the under on the 49ers at this point.
Wow! Well, for next year? The under is going to be 12.5.
That's what I'm saying. The hype has gotten a little too hot. All right.
The last one was that Bevel, Richard, who really is not in question, and Cable will be back next year.
Okay. All right. Mariners.
Wait. I want to talk about that for one more second. Pete is just so committed to what he does.
They never had coaching changes. They got rid of Sherman Smith as running backs coach a few years ago. I mean, they changed, as has been noted, they changed offensive coordinators after Pete's first season when they brought in Daryl Bevel. And if you can remember who the offensive coordinator was before Daryl Bevel, you are a better Seahawks fan than I.
A person who died during training camp. Was that during Pete's tenure?
That was Mike Holmgren.
That was Michael. Did they have a Shermer?
Sorry, that's who it was. It was Fritz Shermer.
Anyway, I think Pete is very committed to what they do. And maybe Cable will be scapegoated for this, but I just don't see it happening. They're going to say we had a 10-6 year, and that was a good year.
I still think there's a decent chance of the Cable change. I would be somewhat surprised if it was more than that.
I do agree with what Mina is saying, that if they make the playoffs, no way they're moving on from Cable. They don't want to. They would only do it because they had to.
It does affect things more than it probably should. All right. Should we go into the Mariners?
Okay. I've only got one.
I also had, similar to the coaching change, the Mariners will have a new manager at some point in 2018.
Really?
I think that Scott Servais is going to, that's their manager, right?
Could be. No.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I think he's going to take the blame if this season goes south. Jerry DePoto's changed every player.
I was going to say Trader Jerry is addicted to trading. Now he'll be addicted to new managers. Yeah. It'll be.
No, they're going to have a new manager every 2 weeks.
Steinbrenner Yankees style. He's going to fire everybody. Bring him back.
Service will have multiple stints throughout the season. That'd be great. I'm in on that, actually. Let's go for it.
Managers will be coming and going.
All right. Did you have a Mariners bold prediction?
My Mariners bold prediction is that Nelson Cruz will be traded at the trade deadline.
Okay. That seems not that bold, but okay, he's in the final year of his contract, right?
I mean, he's a perfect candidate for a trade, but also it's kind of projecting out what I expect the Mariners to do this season too.
Yeah. All right, Husky football. The Huskies will play in the Rose Bowl for the first time since 2001 was the actual game, but that season.
Really?
So you kind of have to thread the needle now. It's weird. It's not actually any harder to make the Rose Bowl than the fact that there are 12 teams in the Pac-12. But it seems harder because you have to be like good enough to win the conference, but not good enough to get in the college football playoff. So basically, I'm predicting the Huskies are going to lose to Auburn and lose once in conference play, but still win the Pac-12.
Okay, I have a similar prediction, which is that UW football will lose in week one to Auburn in Atlanta on a quote-unquote neutral site.
Yes.
And then we'll rattle off 12 victories in a row and clinch a spot in the college football playoff.
Well, there you go.
Can we take a second to look at this schedule, which I hope I still have up? I mean, this schedule is building up very promisingly for the Huskies. They're going to take advantage of...
not playing USC.
Well, early commitments to the NFL and coaching changes throughout the Pac-12.
So you're confident that Oregon is going to be drop off that much with Willie Taggart's departure? Because they did maintain continuity with promoting Mario Cristobal is from offensive coordinator to head coach. They kept most of this recruiting class. They'll have a healthy Justin Herbert.
When was I scared of Oregon?
For like 15 years. Most of your life, a good percentage of your life.
Okay, road games in the Pac-12 at UCLA with a new coach.
Yes.
At Oregon with a new coach.
Yes.
At Cal, probably still not talent-wise a good enough team to beat UW. Yeah. And at Wazoo with at least a new quarterback, but a team that's probably going to look very different next year than they did this year.
Quite possibly.
And at Utah. That might be a sneaky, dangerous game at Utah.
Could be.
They don't play USC, who also will have most likely a new quarterback.
Still no word, by the way, on Alex Grinch going to Ohio State.
Don't yeah, Alex Brink, who knows what's going to happen with him?
Call back.
This is shaping up to be, with Jake in his senior year, we don't know how the rest of the offense is going to look. The defense is going to be excellent and more experienced than they were this year. They'll lose Vita Vea, but I believe in their ability to create, to...
You want to say you made Hove? Make a new Hove.
To develop D linemen. Look, they made a new secondary over and over and over again.
No, they've done that. And Vita Vea replaced Danny Shelton, who was pretty good in his own right at that position.
This coaching staff can develop a defense. Plus, we're going to have what will likely be unleashed Savon Ahmed all year next year.
That's optimistic. I think 8-1 is realistic in conference play. I don't know that I think that 10-0, including the championship.
One additional prediction alongside this, though.
Okay.
Is at this time next year, Coach Pete will have a top five recruiting class. Wow. In terms of average grade.
Like a Pelton cast top five, but with a recruiting class.
That's in terms of average grades. You note that for next year when I'm right.
Did you have UW basketball?
No.
Jalen Noel will declare for the NBA draft, but ultimately decide to return for his sophomore season.
I thought about something like this. I don't know if I thought about him coming back.
Well, I don't think he's going to have a great conference play, but there's so little downside to declaring that I think he'll probably test the waters, and then the NBA will be like, no, we're good, and then he'll come back.
He's going to declare with the intention maybe of coming back, and then all of a sudden he's going to be like the 30th pick in the draft.
We'll see. No, still not getting that much hype among scouts. We'll see. Let's see here. Sounders. Got anything?
Nope.
Really? The Sounders will reach the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League, something that just 7 MLS teams have ever done, 2 of them coming last year. The Sounders previously did it during the 2012-13 version of the CONCACAF Champions League, which now has moved to they're only playing it in the spring.
So what will this entail? What do they have to do to get there?
They would have to win 2 series.
Okay.
We learned last week that they'll be playing Santa Tecla FC, mm-hmm. El Salvadorian side, in the round of 16. The competition will get much stiffer in the quarterfinals. That'll be where it'll be a challenge for them.
What teams usually dominate the CONCACAF? Is it Mexican teams?
Liga MX teams, yes.
Okay.
Usually, like, on average, probably about 75% of semifinalists are from Liga MX. And then basically the rest are all from MLS. Okay. Wild. I've got one wild card.
I've got two wild cards.
By the way, we forgot to go. Did I mention when we were going to reviewing 2017 predictions, the bonus prediction from you that Lonzo Ball would be the number one pick?
I think Fultz will be drafted within the top five, but I don't think he cracks the top three.
I would be stunned if he falls outside the top three.
I mean, Lonzo Ball is going number one.
No, I don't think he is.
But then also you've got Malik Monk. There's so many players out there.
Scouts are not that high on Malik Monk.
Oh, just you wait. Oh, so close. I don't know why I gave that bonus prediction.
I was
predicting you said that he would be drafted ahead of Markel.
You said Markel Fultz was going to be a top five pick, and I was like, yeah, that's I think a little higher than that. And you were like, Lonzo!
Look, I was not far off. He's the number two pick.
But he was drafted behind Markel Fultz. That was the whole question that we were discussing.
I'm sure they would both do it differently. Could they do it again?
All right, my bonus prediction, Breanna Stewart will lead the WNBA in scoring, having finished second in 2017 with 19.9 points per game behind Brittany Griner, who is number one at 21.9 points per game.
Okay, I've got two more.
Okay.
Seattle's new NHL team, nicknamed the Salmon.
The Salmon?
Will break records for season ticket down payments in 2018, and many will declare in fall 2018 amidst a down year for other Seattle sports that Seattle is now a hockey town.
2 years away from them actually played hockey here?
People will not care.
All right.
There's going to be so much hype for hockey, and it is right on the brink of coming.
I do not expect that we will have a team name in 2018.
That's your prediction?
I mean, that's not an official bold prediction. That's a sub-bold prediction. I don't expect it until 2019, at least.
Yeah. You're almost reminding me of my annual Seahawks Super Bowl bet to make another prediction.
Don't do it. Reconsider.
In the past, it's worked. Like,
read some literature.
Two out of the last 7 years.
I mean, two out of the last five, right? We're not that far from the Super Bowl. Okay.
Seattle will seem to be farther from getting an NBA team a year from now than they are right now.
So what would that entail?
I mean, it's a tough thing because there's no tangible way to view it, but I think that
basically if New Orleans and Memphis had new local ownership that or seemed committed to keeping their teams there.
No progress with Key Arena and the NBA, or the NBA specifically says that they're not interested in Key Arena.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to say that. I think they're
going to say it with their actions instead of their words.
Yep. That would probably be a likely scenario. All right, well, that's a depressing note to wrap up on. We have anything
and
more
the Seahawks there? Will face. I think I predicted that they would face the Steelers.
So many times.
Numerous years
so
ago.
Many
I'm just
times.
Waiting for that Seahawks Steelers Super Bowl rematch.
I mean, with your luck, it'll probably be the year you didn't predict it.
I'm fine with that. That wouldn't be bad luck because the Seahawks would play in the Super Bowl.
That's a good point. All right.
I don't take these
note,
bold predictions that seriously.
No, it's based on your record last year. Clearly, you don't.
Just trying to be bold here.
On that note, thanks for listening to the Peltoncast Youth 2017. My bold prediction is that we will continue to appreciate the listener into 2018.
Thank you so much to everybody who listened. We didn't return in 2000. We returned in 2016.
That is correct.
But I'll tell you, we reached a new level in 2017.
We did. We got superstar guests like Mina Kimes.
And hats.
That's true. And live podcasts. Hopefully more of those in 2018.
In 2018, here's what you can expect from the Peltoncast. Regression to the mean.
But could we make it work for us? That's going to be positive, right? We're going to get better.
Dumplings.
No.
Burritos.
Burritos.
We're going to try to avoid the Mariners as much as possible, but Mariners hot takes might return.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Mariners hot takes are coming back. Hydroplane coverage.
Oh, unparalleled. You're not going to get hydroplane coverage like this on any other Seattle sports podcast. I guarantee it.
There are many people who I have in mind for special guests at live podcasts who I haven't talked to, and so maybe they'll be there too.
There you go.
At least one more live podcast, though.
And also be sure to check out the regular weekly pod coming later this week. We'll preview the Fiesta Bowl. We'll preview Seahawks Cardinals. And we'll do what we do.
And thank you so much to everybody who's reviewed the podcast, who's rated the podcast in 2017, listened, who's
joined as Third Pelton Brothers or
followed siblings on Twitter. There have been so many Third Pelton Brothers this year.
Yeah. Thanks.
So we wanted to run through one of Baby Fantasy Genius, a.k.a. Lucas. He's a five-year-old. One of his favorite things to do over 2017.
And that's been the mascot game. Every time I come over, immediately. Can we do the mascot game?
Not immediately.
He's disputing whether it's immediately or not. This is something that he's doing with family members, administrators at his school, yep, people that he sees on the street. You didn't do it with people at school?
I kind of did, but not the people on the,
not your classmates?
I did it with the teacher.
He did it with the teacher. That's why I said administrators at your school. Those are people like principals and things like that. This is a semantics issue. But this is naming mascots from college teams. This is Luca's favorite thing to do, and he's probably better at it than you would think. He's certainly better at it than I am, or even you are. Kevin Pelton, ESPN Insider.
I mean, it's not necessarily part of my job to know nicknames per se, but yes.
You have all gone head-to-head with a five-year-old and lost.
That's true. Are you smarter than what is it?
Are you smarter than a fifth grader? We're going way younger.
We're going way younger. So to start this off, we wanted to start by having Luca name. We're going to go through the West bracket of last year's NCAA tournament and see if he can name those nicknames. So we start with the number one seed, Gonzaga.
Bulldogs.
All right, number two seed, Arizona.
Wildcats.
Number three seed, Florida State.
I don't know how to pronounce it,
Seminoles. Number four, West Virginia.
Mountaineers.
Number five, Notre Dame.
Fighting Irish.
Number six, Maryland. Terrapins. Yeah, you don't know how to pronounce that one either. Okay, number seven seed here is St. Mary's.
Gales, I think?
Yep. Number eight is Northwestern.
Wildcats.
Number nine is Vanderbilt.
Commodores.
Number 10 is VCU.
Rams.
Number 11 is Xavier.
Musketeers.
Number 12 is Princeton.
Tigers.
Number 13 is Bucknell.
Bison.
Number 14 is Florida Gulf Coast.
Eagles.
Number 15 is North Dakota.
Fighting Hawks.
I have to go look this up because I don't know this myself.
Not sure on that one.
Number 16, South Dakota State. South Dakota State, one of my personal favorites.
Jackrabbits.
All right. Okay. So that 16 was for 16. All right.
Despite the pronunciation of the Terrapins, I guarantee you when you heard you knew the two North Dakota and South Dakotas. Can we go through a couple more six seeds? I want to do some more 14 through 16 seeds.
All right.
Just because I think it's crazy.
I mean, we've got some more to come back. Okay, Troy.
Trojans.
Mount St. Mary's.
Wait, St. Mary's again?
Mount St. Mary's.
Oh, Mountaineers.
I have no idea if that's correct. New Orleans. Yeah, that's correct. New Orleans.
Well, I really don't know how to pronounce it. I do know that.
Give us your best guess at it, how to pronounce it.
Crusaders?
Oh, it is not. Oh, we've stumped him finally. The Privateers.
Oh, Privateers.
Jacksonville State.
Gamecocks.
Iona.
Gales.
Another Gales. North Carolina Central.
Eagles.
UC Davis.
Aggies.
Kent State.
Golden Flashes.
Northern Kentucky.
Norse.
I have no idea about that one. I thought we had one that one, but no. Texas Southern.
Tigers.
Okay. So then we invited listener, or really my followers on Twitter, to write in. No peeking here. I asked for your most obscure Division I nicknames, because Luca's knowledge pretty much extends to Division I for the most part. All right, William and Mary.
Tribe.
Youngstown State.
Penguins.
Fort Wayne.
Matadors or something? No, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Mastodons?
Mastodons.
Yeah. Furman. Paladins, yeah. Coastal Carolina. That's another one of my favorites.
Chanticleers.
Santa Cruz. Are they Division One? Maybe they're not.
They don't have a logo yet, but they are the Banana Slugs.
There you go. Okay. UC Irvine.
Anteaters.
Southern Illinois.
Stokies or something? Stokies? Stokes?
Salukis, yeah.
Salukis.
UC Santa Barbara.
Gauchos.
Sam Houston State.
Tigers, Coyotes.
We got another one that they stumped you. The Bearcats, apparently.
Bearcats, oh yeah.
Central Arkansas.
Wildcats? Are they?
Another one that I don't know most of these. There's so many of these fringe colleges where they're just like the Tigers or something. And I'm like, how do you possibly know that? What was the one that's the Bisons?
That's Bucknell.
No, but Bucknell is the Bison. There's one that's Bisons.
You said there's one that's Bisons.
That's North Coast State.
What about, was that Lipscomb was the Bisons?
Yeah, yeah. No, wait, they're the Bison also.
They're not plural Bisons?
Yeah. Okay. Central Arkansas is the Bears, apparently. Oh, Bearcats is like a informal nickname. Let's see here. Marist.
Red Foxes.
Manhattan.
Jaspers.
NYU.
New York?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Peacocks.
Wait, is that St. Peter's?
I don't know. Evansville.
Aces or Purple Aces?
Purple Aces, yep. Let's see here. Fairfield.
Stags.
North Texas.
Mean Green.
Centenary.
I don't know what they're called.
Never heard of that one. Do you know that one?
That was one that was offered here. So the Gentleman. San Francisco, USF.
Dons?
Dons, yep. Ooh, Vermont.
Catamounts.
Yeah, that's another good one. Tulsa.
Golden Hurricanes.
Did we do Presbyterian?
No, Blue House.
Blue Hose, apparently.
What is it?
Blue Hose, apparently.
Blue Hose? Oh.
Did we do Stetson?
Hatters.
What are you Stetson?
All right, I know this is one of your favorite. Indiana State.
Sycamores.
Stephen F. Austin.
Lumberjacks.
St. Bonaventure?
Bonnies.
Campbell University.
Camels.
Yep.
Wait, really?
They may be the Fighting Camels. Let's see here. Any other good ones to go through? Oh, Western Illinois.
Leathernecks.
Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne, IPFW.
Fort Wayne?
Yep.
We already did them. They're the Mastodons.
Oh, did we already do them?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Oh, Maryland, Baltimore County.
What do they call them? What's
UMBC?
Rativers, Raiders,
Retrievers.
Retrievers.
Yeah, you were trying to get that. Western Kentucky.
Hilltoppers.
Yeah. All right, I think that's pretty much all of the ones we got. So we stumped you a couple of times here, but this is really pretty impressive for if I. You want to do?
You want to do more?
I mean, the other ones are much easier. You'll obviously get them, like Richmond.
Spiders.
Did you filter out some? Let's go through the ones if you filtered them out that you think are too easy.
Akron.
Zips.
San Diego.
Toreros.
St. Louis.
Billy Kittens.
I like that people named a lot of the interesting ones, I feel. It was like, name your most interesting mascot.
Yeah, they definitely did. Dayton.
Flyers.
Oh, someone did Georgetown.
Hoys.
I mean, that's a piece of cake for you. I actually can't remember exactly which school this is, so let's go reverse. Region Cajuns.
Louisiana.
They just go by University of Louisiana.
They used to be Louisiana Lafayette. Okay. Now they're just Louisiana.
I think that was pretty much all we had here. So nice work, Luca.
Yes. That's
what was I?
I don't have an exact number, but probably about 30 for 32 on those.
Yay. Do you have any favorites, Luca, that you want to name?
Yeah, which are maybe well, you do to do some for, a couple for us.
There's Delta State.
Oh, someone asked that. I didn't think that they were D1. What are they?
The okras? Yeah, the running okra.
The okra, yeah. Which does not seem like a super intimidating mascot, I got to say. Yep. All right, any other of your favorites?
Do you know what Dartmouth's unofficial mascot is?
Well, I know the name of their mascot.
What's the name of their mascot?
Keggy the Keg.
No. It's true. What's the official Dartmouth mascot?
I just told you.
Oh, they're like the mean green, aren't they?
Yeah, their nickname is the...
Big Green.
Mm. Big Green, of course. Do you want to do a couple for us?
Okay. Hit us with them.
Jacksonville.
Rattlers, didn't we do that? No, that's Jacksonville State.
Do the Gamecocks. Jacksonville State Gamecocks.
Oh. You have any guesses for Jacksonville?
You're pretty sure they're not the Jaguars.
Jacksonville's the Dolphins.
Ah, okay. The Dolphins? Okay. What else you got?
Ryder.
Let's see. Ryder is the Mustangs?
Nope.
Just note that Luca just pointed it out, his incorrectness.
Rams? No, I don't know. I don't know Ryder then.
What's Ryder?
Broncos.
Yeah, I knew it was something horse related.
Okay, what else?
Antelope Valley.
See, you always do this one.
Yes.
And it's never the antelopes.
It always seems like a
Grand Canyon, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah, I was going to say, we did not get to Grand Canyon. I don't know about Antelope Valley.
Pioneers.
Okay. Denver is the Pioneers, right?
Yeah, Denver. Secret Heart, Denver are also the Pioneers.
Yeah, it's a Secret Heart.
Do you want to do a run where you try to name all... We play a lot of different variations on this. I'm going to quote this when I say game.
Air quotes.
It's sometimes torture for us. But do you want to do where we name a nickname and you try to name as many as possible of those teams?
Yeah.
Al, do you want to choose one? Kevin, do you want to choose one?
We're going to do a conference?
No, not a conference, but do you want to just choose a nickname and he tries to name as many schools from it?
All right, let's go with Bulldogs.
Gonzaga. There's a lot more now. Mississippi State. Georgia.
Any others you can think of for Bulldogs?
I can think of at least one. Fresno State.
Oh. What conference would you want to do, Luca? What is your favorite conference to do in this game?
Mountain West?
The Mountain West?
I thought you were going to say, like, the Southland.
Well, the Mountain West, well, I kind of like the teams in there, but, well, I'll do Southland, I don't care.
What are some of your other favorite conferences? Because I've also learned of conferences in this game.
How about the Cardinals?
You want to name Cardinals?
Mm-hmm. Incarnate Word. Lamar, which are both in the same conference.
What conference is that?
The Southland.
Okay.
Well, it says that Stanford is a type of Cardinals, but they're necessarily named after the color.
And they're not plural.
There's some other Cardinals out there.
Yeah, there is. I just can't think of them.
Louisville. Oh. Ball State. All right, let's go through the Southland. Abilene Christian.
I think they're the Wildcats, yeah.
They're the Wildcats. We did University of Central Arkansas. Houston Baptist.
Huskies.
You did Incarnate Word Cardinals and Lamar Cardinals. McNeese State.
I'm pretty sure they're the Cowboys.
Yeah, they're the Cowboys. We did UNO. Nichols State.
Well, there's just Nichols.
What is it, though?
I just can't remember it.
They are the Colonels.
Colonels.
Northwestern State.
Demons.
Yeah, I'm disappointed no one mentioned that. That's a pretty good one. Sam Houston State, we did earlier. They're the Bearcats. Mm-hmm. Southeastern Louisiana.
I don't know. Are they the Golden Lions?
Just the Lions.
Oh, Lions.
Stephen F. Austin, we did. And then Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi.
Highlanders.
The Islanders. Islanders. All right, well, I think we've adequately demonstrated.
We did that conference.
We've adequately demonstrated Baby Fantasy Genius's knowledge of obscure college.
I think there's more in the basketball conference.
In the Southland in basketball?
Yeah.
I think that's probably just the basketball.
What else? What other conferences?
I think
he wants more. Once you get him started naming nicknames, then it just doesn't stop.
I think
my next thing is wanting to get him to know the names of the mascots.
The actual physical mascots?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Luca, to demonstrating this. If you're ever around Luca in any sort of social setting, start naming obscure colleges. Wait, what about Coppin State? Do you know that one?
I think they're the Eagles. Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Eagles.
Okay, easily.
Larry Stewart went there. that's what I do.
Is fringe basketball players who went to the colleges.
Yeah.
Someday he'll be there. He's only 5.
Exactly.
Coppin State is 0-9. All right. Well, sorry to Coppin State. But Larry Stewart doesn't go there anymore.
That's true. Not walking through that door. If he did, he'd be old and gray.
Well, if you see Luca in any sort of social setting, start naming fringe colleges to him, and he'll be very pleased. So thank you so much for coming on. This is the first time that you've been on in over a year. And if you...
the first time you've been on.
He was on the Year in Music podcast last year.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, we used that. We did that.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks.
We can edit that.
We'll have the rails at the end.